is the End User, episode 80 for Thursday, January 26th, the Green Tech Sneak Attack. Hello and welcome to the End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User, I'm your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Taylor Marr, and I am a psychic. Chris, do you remember I told you last week Apple would have an event and they were going to revolutionize the field of ebooks and e-textbooks?
Revolutionize, that's a strong word.
Yeah, well, it was sort of right.
I don't know about revolutionize. I mean, I don't think you can revolutionize textbooks because of the content partners. It has nothing to do with Apple not being innovative. It's just the content partners.
Well, so they did pretty well, though. What they were able to do is to get just about all of the major textbook publishers on board, and most of the smaller ones as well. They announced that they were going to make a lot of textbooks available really quickly, more and more over the next year or so, for the iPad only right now. Then they also are releasing a set of tools for home publishing of Apple iBooks for anybody to use to do on their computer. And this isn't just publishing a regular book. This is, you know, the iBook platform, which allows you to do all these animations and links and all this other stuff. So
yeah, it's like the CD-ROMs of old.
Right.
This reminds me so much of that. Is hey, we're going to make this content and it's going to be just like a magazine or a textbook, and we're going to put it on a CD and distribute it to everyone.
Right.
I don't think
that's
actually
going to
happen. And
they sort of got that wrong at the time, but eventually it sort of happened that way.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, what really enabled that is the web, right? I mean, we have educational content on the web that is that flashy and is that deep linked and is that resource for students. I'm just not sure it's going to be in the form of this app. Although the app does look fantastic, by the way.
Probably not, but you need to take steps towards that direction anyway, don't you? And somehow, despite the fact that there's the web, textbooks haven't gone away yet.
No, they haven't gone away, and that's because of the content partners.
But they will get a lot cheaper because Apple announced that the maximum price for any textbook on the iPad is $15.
Yeah, I don't see that working at all. The content partners are not going to go
too late.
That.
Worked. It's done.
No, until I actually see somebody be able to get their textbook through an iPad instead of through their college bookstore or through Amazon, then it's still going. I don't think this is going to do a whole lot in the short term, at least. But I think things like this will do something in the long term. They're just first to the game, like Apple always is. That's not true actually, but they're the first to put that that gloss over it that makes it really consumer friendly.
Right. So they win. The end.
Well, I can't find any holes in that argument. No, but I think this looks really cool. What's also really cool is their textbook specific authoring app. It's a shame it's only on OS X. If they really wanted to blow up, I guess they want to sell more Macs because of it. Not actually have a hit on their hands. They want to sell more Macs because of it, right? I mean, that's their business model.
Well, I'm sure they'll release more development. I mean, if you are trying to make a textbook, is buying a Mac really going to be a hindrance to you?
No, especially the cheaper MacBook Airs. They're relatively cheap these days. They used to be like seriously expensive. It's not really true anymore these days.
Yeah, or a Mac Mini and a KVM switch.
But I always come back to that graph we saw on the End User a while back. I forget who made it, but remember that interactive graph of the operating system share and how all versions of OS X are less used than Vista. And that's just so sad to me. compare it to Vista, right? I mean, it's night and day. There's no comparison whatsoever there.
It is sad, Chris, because it just shows how many people out there are idiots.
How many people out there are cheap is probably more likely. Because, you can get a Windows PC for like $400 or less. And a lot of people do get those cheaper options. Taylor, did your Skype just freeze again?
For a moment, but you paused for a second and then caught up real fast.
Okay, well, we'll move with it. So from the chat room, McPhillips says, Apple has lower market penetration than Dell has by itself. Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's a matter of, I mean, Apple doesn't care. They're not a mass market company. They make their astronomical profits on good quality things, and they don't really care about being mass market, except for the iPhone. If they had to give up the iPhone, they would not be doing nearly as well as they are now. In fact,
that's probably true. But the iPhone was a natural outgrowth.
Yeah, it was. And they just released their numbers today. We didn't really put them in the show notes because, you know, we're technologists. We're not really concerned with how the company is doing as long as they're healthy enough to make the gadgets that we use and all of that. So, but Apple had like the best quarter in their history. So if that's any indication. They're doing just fine, not being a mass market company like Dell.
Yep.
All right, well, let's move on to some piracy news, as if you didn't get enough of it from the massive coverage of SOPA and PIPA, which, by the way, have been shelved for now. So we still have to stay vigilant with those things, but they've been shelved. So victory. And yeah, it's especially all because of the end user, too.
The MPAA is pushing for a worldwide monster version of SOPA instead.
Right. Yeah. So it's going to come back around. Don't worry. But I'm glad that we got on our broadcasting station and broadcast to the world that SOPA should not be allowed to stay in its current form. And I think we made a difference.
We did. The end user was definitely the deciding factor.
If we had,
I hear that there are a lot of movers and shakers in law in Washington who listen to our podcast.
Yeah, of the three,
and by that I mean you're the mover and I'm the shaker.
I was gonna say, of the three people that have ever listened to us, one of them happened to be a high-ranking official who smacked SOPA down. I think it was Ron Wyden to us. That's... All right. Well,
he
won't stop emailing me. What's wrong? He wants to put birds on things with us.
All right.
Well, anyway, let's get into the actual news. I think that was the longest transition, or segue, rather, in the history of podcasting. No? I think it was.
Hold on. Just wait a second.
just wait it
out. Now it's the longest.
Just wait it out.
In the history of podcasting.
So what we're talking about here is the Fed's smashing mega upload, as Ars Technica calls it. And that's actually a little bit confusing. But the U.S. government has moved in on Kim.com from Mega Upload, and they took the site. They physically went in there and took the servers away.
Yes, Kim.com, a man with dual Russian and Finnish citizenship who was living in a gigantic mansion in New Zealand and was raided by an international police force and found in his panic room with several firearms.
Yes, yes. It's like out of the movies. I mean, you couldn't make this up. So,
well, you could, and they did.
Well, you could, and they did, and they have
forever. It's like a made-up story that came true.
Yeah, it's a made-up story that came true. That's right. What's interesting to me here is that we were talking about previously about SOPA and PIPA, and this guy is pretty much the problem, right? The problem is that SOPA and PIPA affected everyone else. But
yeah, and they wouldn't have affected him.
But yeah, exactly.
What he was doing was already illegal.
They were completely misled in their implementations. But if anyone says that piracy is not a problem, all you have to do is point over here and this guy. Now, there's one argument that well, it's not a problem because they got him. You know, our laws work. We don't need any more laws on the books to deal with piracy because they already work. And this is an example of that at least. But there is some problem with piracy, and it is exemplified by Kim.com.
I can't believe that's his name.
I know. It's not actually his real name. Like, his parents did not name him.
Oh, I know that.
Kim.com. Actually, I forget what his real name was.
It's not hard to look up. It's also not very exciting.
No, definitely not. So, do you want to turn on our afterburners, perhaps?
Yeah, I suppose now is a good time as any. Let's just hit the switch here. Whoa. Got a kick to him today.
Yeah, hold on. So Microsoft is discontinuing its virtual points system on Xbox Live and Zune, which is fantastic because I tried it once and it's horrific to try to translate between points. Microsoft doesn't need its own currency. They finally figured it out and you can actually pay them money now.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's excellent. I never understood the whole system. I didn't realize they had it for Zune too.
Yeah.
But
I got Rango on there on rental.
Good riddance.
Yes, good riddance.
Oh, I saw that. Well, Google is saying good riddance to Picnic. Well, they already bought the web service called Picnic, which is a photo editing service, but they're shutting it down. Doesn't matter too much to the founders because they already got their payday, but it matters to people who like Picnic.
Did you ever really seriously use Picnic? I definitely
No, not at all. Not once. All right. Well, something I do use every day is my AT&T smartphone. Even though I only get 2 gigabytes of data a month, they are getting rid of that plan. They're bumping up their prices from $15 for 200 megabytes, $25 for 2 gigabytes, and making it $20, $30, 300 megabytes, 3 gigabytes. And that's those are the lowest plans.
Ouch.
Can go. So those are now more expensive than the cheapest Verizon plans, but you also get more data.
Right, because Verizon, well, they all nix their unlimited plan. That's what I'm...
Except for Sprint, although Sprint's not really unlimited either.
Right. So Droid Razor Max is the next Verizon flagship Android phone. How do you say Max with 2X? I don't think there's a way to articulate that in audio.
I think it's just Max.
It's just Max. So you can get one for $299.99, and its big selling feature is that it has a large battery. That's how you solve the Android battery problem. It's just throw a bigger battery in.
Yeah, and so it's just built in, and so it's like a battery pack without the extra bulk.
Exactly.
I mean, there's some extra bulk, but it's still a pretty darn skinny phone.
Yeah, and other than that, it has all of the typical Android accoutrement.
Right. In other smartphone news, if you have an iPhone or iPad with iOS 5, you tried to jailbreak, you couldn't do it. There was only one way to do it, and that involved connecting the phone to your computer every time you turned it on. So there is finally a full permanent jailbreak solution to all iOS 5 devices.
Cool.
It's called Green Poison, and you can, I don't know, Google it.
Greenpoisonwithazero.com. It reminds me of the old jailbreakme.com or .net or whatever that was. You just like go into Best Buy and start jailbreaking things. It's great.
Yeah, that was like the complete opposite of a tethered jailbreak.
Yeah. So BoxyBox is going to sell live TV tuners. That's cool. So they're actually going to start integrating live TV into the BoxyBox. I mean, that's fantastic. It's no media center competitor yet, but they're well on their way. And if they keep this up, they'll, maybe they'll get cable card soon. Can I start a crazy rumor? BoxyBox is getting cable card.
No, they're bypassing cable card. Remember, they're going to plug directly into the back of your TV. Assuming you have some magical future port that no one has yet.
Yeah, what was that port called?
I don't remember.
It was like the mobile HDMI port. Kind of bonkers.
No, it was based on HDMI, but it wasn't HDMI.
Right, okay. Yeah, exactly.
All right.
MHL.
Well, anyway, yeah, that must have been it.
I'm ruining the afterburners, but that's what it was. It was MHL.
Well, that's okay. The afterburners are almost burned out. Kodak is filing for bankruptcy. They just are not making the debts. No wonder. They stopped making that instant film that was used to be their lifeblood. You know, they're still making cameras and printers and stuff, but they won't be doing all that much of that anymore because, and let's turn off the afterburners so we can rein in on this a little bit. Are they off on your side, Chris?
Yeah, they're off. I turned them off.
Okay, good. Once they get out of their financial trouble, Kodak is going to switch all over their film production to making thin film solar. Green tech, sneak attack.
It was a green tech sneak attack. Straight out of the afterburners, looking into green tech
so,
through one story.
Thin film solar is great because you can use less silicon, so that makes it a lot cheaper for production, a lot cheaper actually. And it's flexible solar panels, so you can use them in more applications. They're super lightweight and they're flexible, so you can put it on like the roof of a car, for example.
So
why not?
If they're,
or maybe in some sort of spaceship.
If they're going Chapter 11, is this part of their reorganization? Because, you know, Chapter 11 isn't, you know, we're going out of business. It's we're going to try to reorganize and come back around.
I'm sure this was in the works for longer than that, but no doubt it is part of their restructuring process.
Yeah, definitely. That makes a lot of sense. But I mean, the problem with Kodak was that they got used to the profits of film, and after film kind of happened and they moved to digital, I mean, they kind of did everything right. I mean, they did effectively move into digital cameras, and they did have an online business that printed them for you and stuff like that, and they kind of did everything right. The problem is they just grew too big, and then they couldn't survive with the thinner margins that they were making in the digital age. How many times have we seen this theme come around? It happens yet again, except for this time to a company that we actually kind of care about.
Right. Well, I mean, Kodak has tried to switch focuses a bunch of different times, but this one just seems to have a better ring of truth to it. You know, something that might actually stick, as opposed to trying to design a reprogrammable picture frame that you can print out of a tiny pocket printer.
Or you know, it's always bugged me those electronic picture frames that like you have to plug them in. It's so insane. I mean, I know there's no way of doing it if you can't plug them in, but all electronic picture frames are dead unless you either drill a hole in your wall and conceal the wires or just don't care about a rat's nest. That's like a fundamental problem with digital picture frame.
Yeah, it is a bit of a problem. It's not a huge problem for everybody.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm sure some people use them, but I feel like ultimately, usually they get taken down. Although maybe that's true of pictures too, you know?
Well, I know my parents have one and they don't ever bother turning it on.
Yeah, they don't turn it on, right?
Right.
It even takes up power. I mean, I wonder, well, probably not. You probably couldn't see it on your electric bill, right? Like if you went 1 month without using it and 1 month with using an electronic photo frame. Probably
you might notice if you're really thrifty.
Yeah, if you're really thrifty with power. Or if you have
if
really...
If you're using a kilowatt power meter.
Yeah, you could do that. I did get one of those things. I had some fun going around my house and looking at how many watts everything takes. It's all the heating elements that are the worst.
Yeah, heating elements are pretty bad, and lights are really bad, but those are hard to measure because they're all built in.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to this week in law of the end user edition or something like that. We've got two law stories going on that we normally kind of skip the law stories, but these ones I thought were particularly interesting, so I went ahead and added them. The first one we're going to talk about is the case where they had the government, one of the government agencies, I forget where they were now, basically shot a little GPS unit onto somebody's car and then tried to use the GPS as evidence. And there's been a lot of debate, more philosophical in nature, although also specifically to the case, as to whether or not that can count, or whether or not that's illegal to do, whether that is counts as a search.
My memory was that they had a handheld GPS tracker, and they walked into somebody's driveway and stuck it under their car. What you're thinking of, I believe, is Spider-Man.
That's quite possible. I could have mixed the two up.
Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe they do have a shootable stick-em-on GPS tracker in real life. That'd be cool.
I don't see why not.
That's true. Well, here's why not. Because it's unconstitutional.
Unconstitutional. So the judge in this case ruled that it is unconstitutional to put a GPS unit on your car without a warrant. So if you get a warrant, you can do it. And that's how it should be, because those are the legal provisions that we provide for such things. So fear not. There's probably not a GPS unit on the back of your... Although you might just wear that tinfoil hat just in case.
Won't really do that much in this particular instance.
What about a Faraday cage in your car?
Maybe like a signal scrambler?
Yeah, you could do something like that.
Or fake GPS signal broadcaster?
You could just use...
So that the device always says that it's in Bermuda?
You could just use Light Squared. Because remember, they from a few weeks back, that turns out that Light Squared is trying to get into a cell phone market, and their spectrum competes with GPS.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So all you have to do is use Light Squared, and you're good. Yeah. So this is a win, I think, because that's how it should be, right?
Right. But our next story, I think, maybe not so much a win.
Yeah, not so much. I'm actually of two minds about this. And I have no doubt that this will be appealed up to the Supreme Court. I don't think this will stay where it is and just get resolved. It's been this particular judge, Judge Roberts Blackburn, stated that you have to turn over the password to your encryption, assuming you know it, and that is not against the Fifth Amendment.
Right.
Now, there is a little bit of...
It's not unreasonable search and seizure to demand your encryption.
Well, it's not it's about not incriminating yourself.
Right.
So it's funny because it's a little bit of both because on one side of things, you knowing the password, you are in some way incriminating yourself. And then in the physical world, if you have a key, you can be compelled to give the key up. So it's a little weird because it's not a physical thing that you're holding on to. It's something in your mind that unlocks the computer. So it's a little bit of both. And who knows how this is going to go? And again, I'm sure this is going to go up to the Supreme Court. So we'll find out eventually.
Yeah, I think the weakest part of this judge's argument is that the precedent that he cites predates our federal government. It was made in 1789.
Wow. Well, you gotta... That doesn't even make sense. There wasn't even encryption in 1780.
Yeah.
That's one of the problems. I mean, you start running up against... it's kind of like Microsoft's old ad campaign. Remember, authentically digital? It's like here we have an authentically digital problem, and the old laws are just not going to cut it. You know, we have to come up with something new, and we have to. I mean, we can draw parallels and make arguments from old law, but this is really just something new. There's not a whole lot you can do about this.
Right. Yeah, but there are some parallels to consider, and I think right about some of these things. And so I am sort of two minds about this as well, but as someone who is wary of consumer protections, I think we both are to some degree. This just seems dangerous, and it should be, even if the higher courts decide to uphold this precedent, it should still be debated in some more rigorous manner.
And by the way, this woman whom we're talking about in the case is something about like mortgage fraud that she's being investigated for, and she used like an industrial grade encryption on her laptop. It's pretty crazy. It doesn't really say anything about what may or may not be on the laptop, but not a lot of people use industrial grade encryption, although they can and use TrueCrypt or something. Not a lot of people go out and do that.
Yeah.
But again, that's not what's important here. What's important here, well, it is for her, but for the world that's watching, the reason that this is not just any other case is that this will be the precedent, whatever happens with this.
Right. That's true. And that's why I say it should be discussed in a higher court.
Yeah.
It should be thought about very heavily before final decision is made.
Well, yeah, and that's what the system is designed to do. I mean, you delay it a little bit, and we think about it more, and you follow that chain up to the top, and then you get the ultimate decision. And we've gotten time to actually think this through, so we'll get there.
Right.
Although I have a feeling we won't talk about it on The End User. My hunch. We'll just fade into obscurity at some point.
Well, yeah. If it gets rejected by the next court up, then it'll fade into obscurity. That'll be that.
Yeah. Not dissimilar to the Cyanogen Mod App Store that's going to be coming or Ben soon. It looks like Cyanogen, or its developer, Koosh, as he's known on Twitter, is making a new App Store for all of the apps that were rejected from the proper Android market. So this is pretty cool. I know you don't care. I guess you got Cydia, so you have Cydia on iOS.
Well, I mean, I do care because it's kind of surprising to me that there are enough illegitimized Android apps that need their own store. I mean, I thought you don't even technically need a store to upload or to install an Android app.
Yeah, you don't. He's just making it convenient. I mean, it's one.
It just seems like a lot of work.
It's one thing to just just take the what you do is you can take an APK file and install it on your phone, just download it from. But he's actually going to make a market for this. You know, just like, I mean, you used to be able to use web apps on the iPhone 2G, right? And then turns out it's more convenient to get native apps on them.
Are they going to charge money for these apps in the CyanogenMod app store? Do you have to be using CyanogenMod to get to the CyanogenMod app store?
I don't...
Will it be built into the CyanogenMod images?
Yes, that I'm sure of. I don't know if they're going to charge...
Remove it if you like CyanogenMod but don't want the CyanogenMod app store.
Yeah. You could say that. I bet you they will charge money because he's out to make money. I mean, that's the point here. But I don't know about the... can you remove it from CyanogenMod? I don't know.
Actually, you know what? You're right. You were right. I've changed my mind. I don't care.
Yeah, I knew you didn't care from the beginning. It's like I said, you have Cydia, so...
I do care. It's just I know that there aren't answers to these questions yet. I'm sure we'll get them in time.
You sounded like a Batman at the end of the Batman show. The Batman show? What am I, Regis Philbin?
What are you talking about?
The Batman show. No, you know, the end of the... with the questions. You're like, but do they cost money?
Oh, right. The the narrator.
And do they come on CyanogenMod pre-installed? Find out next week on The End User.
We should start doing that.
Well, on This Week in Tech, they do The Week Ahead. They talk about stories. But that seems like a lot of work to me. It's the problem.
And do they do it in Batman narration style?
They haven't yet, but they should.
They can't because it was our idea first.
No, they still can. They still can if they want.
I'll sue.
All right, well, let's move on. Sorry. I opened a new tab and there was an ad playing loudly in my ears. It's always irritating. The pop-up ads, they're the worst.
All right. Yeah, they are the worst. But you know what else is the worst? Is brute force attacks against Wi-Fi networks.
Yes. And this we kind of skipped over this in weeks where we had more news. It's been around for a couple weeks now. And there's a new tool called Reaver that exploits a vulnerability in specific implementations of WPS. If you have a router that you've bought within 3-4 years, you probably have WPS enabled. And it turns out there's actually no way that you can disable it on some routers, including mine. So don't brute force my network, first of all. And... Second of all, it's...
You can, however, avoid this problem entirely by owning an Apple router.
Right. And the key is that Apple uses a one-time PIN every time you connect. And other routers do not do that. They, print it on a sticker and stick it on the router or something like that. Or any kind of manner of ways of doing that. And it turns out that by having a static PIN like that, it makes it crackable because... The way in which they implemented the PIN numbers, it turns out you really only get 7 unknown digits, which is about 10 million combinations, which computers can crack through numbers pretty quickly. And so 7 number-only digits is not quite enough to really protect yourself. I mean, so if you look at like WPA encryption, you've got however many ASCII characters you want, and that provides you a lot of protection. But only numbers and only 7 of them makes it a pretty weak way. So it turns out using this tool, you couldn't crack a Wi-Fi router with WPS on it in about 2 hours. So that's not too horrible for drive-by people. But if you have a hacky neighbor or something, then that might end poorly. So it's nothing to freak out over, but it is something that's out there, and it is something that should be fixed. I wish Linksys would give me an update that would just allow me to turn it off. That's the big thing here, is you can't turn it off.
What if you install open source firmware on your router?
That's the only way, because none of the open source firmwares support it in the first place.
Wait, are you saying you haven't done that?
No, I've just been using the standard Linksys software on there.
But why?
I don't know. What does Tomato and DDWRT really do for you?
Everything.
But ultimately, what do you get out of it?
I don't know. I have a Mac.
Yeah, I don't know. I have it installed on my old 54RG, or no, 50WRT54G, but not on my...
I just assumed anyone who knew what it actually was would do it, because it's better.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I had it, and it doesn't really offer a whole lot of advantages, at least over current firmware. You see, back in the day, it was true that you should probably have it, but in this day and age, it's...
Okay, well, get a time machine, Apple.
Yeah. I thought you meant an actual time machine. Now, that would be...
Well, I mean, if you can get one of those, then yeah, get one. Well, that's it for the end user stories for this week. So but our tip of the week is also kind of an end user story, because we were talking about it before the show, and we thought it would be fun to go over it real quickly.
It's a little bit.
So here's how this whole thing came about. Someone in my house asked me to record something on our DVR, shared DVR, to actually record the State of the Union that was on TV last night. And
wait,
said, hey,
the State of the Union was on TV last night? Sorry, I didn't.
Hey, some people...
I didn't tune into Fox, NBC, ABC, Telemundo, or C-SPAN, or C-SPAN 2, or ESPN 8, The Ocho last night, so I didn't know that the State of the Union was on.
Or CNN, or Headline News, or Fox News, MSNBC, CNBC. yeah, it was on a lot of channels. But by the time other people listen to this, it won't have been last night. They may even be listening weeks or months or years or decades or millennia from now. And they won't know.
Millennia from now?
Yep.
We're going to have some archival person listening to the podcast at some point, far distant future. Maybe we'll make it onto an alien ship or something. They'll send it away and...
They'll pore over every word. They will marvel at our prescience that we were having this conversation right now, that we figured it all out.
Yeah, somebody after we're long dead is freaking out right now. Or right then, I guess. Right then in the future.
Indeed, right then. So anyway, here's what happened. My roommate wanted me to record the State of the Union.
Yes.
And she assumed that the only way that I could do this was I had to go to the house, turn on the TV.
like a VCR.
Find the program in the future and set it to record. And so... I went on my iPhone and I opened up the Comcast Xfinity app, set the show to record, went to the email, responded and said, I just set the recording from my iPhone. You could have done that too, from your iPhone.
It's so funny how some people don't internalize the fact that we live in the future. You know, of course, you and I do because we're geeks, but some people don't realize that you can, like, print wirelessly and stuff like that. And some people don't realize, like, at my old job at the soccer company here in D.C., they didn't have a file network set up. They were, like, shipping things back and forth with a USB disk to desktops in the office. So it's kind of funny when you run into somebody who doesn't realize that we live in the future. At least that's how I like to look.
I find that it happens all the time, I've stopped being bothered by it. You can't go around being bothered by the fact that people don't realize this, because to certain extents, even you and I don't realize this. There is going to be someone out there who's like, "Oh, you don't have this and you don't do this. What's wrong with you?"
Yep.
We just happen to think that more than some other people. The problem with me is that when you sit someone down and explain to them exactly how they're living in the future and how they can make their lives better with almost no effort on their part, and they willfully ignore your explanation.
Yes, that is frustrating.
I mean, if they have some reason, you know, for something, you know, if you don't want to read books on your iPad because it gives you eye strain, okay, that's fine.
That makes sense. Get a Kindle.
Yeah.
Or a book.
Right. But, I mean, if it's something that can prevent you from asking your roommate to do a favor for you, if you can just do it yourself for free, well, then people should know how to do that.
so that led me into thinking about, I don't have the ability to do that, although... there is an app for Media Center that will allow you to do that. It's called Remote Potato.
So you do have the ability to do that.
I could. I'd have to.
You're just living in the past.
I'm just living in the past. Although I'm not ignoring it. I'm just living in it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take this for a test. This conversation has inspired me to take Remote and Potato for a test spin and see if I actually use it or not. I bet you I will.
Hooray! One step closer to the singularity.
Yeah, the thing is that we, since I don't have cable, it almost makes a little less sense for me because there's less content on TV than if I had cable. So, you know, just about everything that I want to record is already set to record, and there's really not that much content out there in the first place that I haven't already set it.
Okay, that is a good point.
Except for in a special case like State of the Union, if I wanted to record State of the Union, that would be one event that would actually be useful.
Right.
All right, well, let's move on to our kicker with that. I wanted to pass along an HTML5 version of Command and Conquer. And this is how far we've come with modern web standards, is that we can actually play a real video game on them. This is not Super Mario, and this is not, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog or some emulator game. This is a, albeit buggy, JavaScript and HTML5 version of Command and Conquer, which is just fantastic. It takes a long time to load if you try to open it up, but it's one step. It really highlights the multimedia features of HTML5 and the new CSS and JavaScript. It really exemplifies that and how much we don't need Flash.
Yeah, it's amazing to me how much capability HTML5 has that people are just starting to discover.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was like just 6 to 8 months ago, I saw someone had created a scaled diagram of all the planets in the solar system rotating around the sun.
Cool.
And at that time, that was one of the forefronts of HTML5 website design. And now it's Command and Conquer. So what's next? Movies?
Yes. Here, this is your story. You take this one.
Well, it's not an HTML5 website, but the original Star Wars, that is Episode 4, A New Hope, the one with Luke Skywalker for the completely uninitiated, has been sweeted. And if you don't know what that means either, it means it's been it's been remade by fans on a very low budget, like in the movie Be Kind, Rewind, if you saw that. And if you're uninitiated to that, well, then, I don't know, go look it up. But it took 3 years, and every scene was done by different amateur filmmaker fans.
So it's like a distributed edition of Star Wars. And by the way, it's absolutely ridiculous. I there's no way I could watch this entire movie. Did you watch it?
I've not watched the whole thing yet.
There's like Lego men, and like some things are filmed on iPhones or something, and it's really bizarre, but it's really cool.
Actually, the very beginning of the movie where it says a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away is just a screenshot of Twitter.
Yeah, it's nice. Interesting. Sorry, I was watching it for got distracted. But yeah, it is really interesting that this kind of thing is possible. Now, if only we could figure out a way to get more quality out of distributed filmmaking, wouldn't that be cool?
Well, people are working on that as well. But the point of this was a deliberate lack of quality.
Yeah, deliberate lack of quality. We film this on phones and stuff like that, and like there's paper ships flying around. It's a really neat concept. Although there's no way I could watch it, the host wouldn't happen. I could watch every clip in isolation, but I'm not sure I could digest the whole thing at once.
Yeah, I would love it if this if it was a podcast.
Yeah, that would be cool. You get like one of these, you know, a day or something like that for however long that would take.
Wow, you know, I never thought I would actually be clamoring for serialization. This is a lifetime first for me.
This is the first time. Yeah, well, there's a first time for everything.
I guess so. I just didn't think it would happen on the end either.
All right, well, that'll do it for us. We can take our amateur podcast and end it. Not permanently. Don't worry. We'll be back next week. Although some people may have been worried that we ended it a few weeks ago. We're back in the saddle and stronger than ever.
An extended holiday break.
Extended holiday break. All right.
Well, we are back and older than ever.
So thank you, everyone, for listening to this show. And, of course, you can find more information at our blog. That's theenduser.com, thenduser.com. Join us live every Wednesday night. We've been going at about 8:30 every Wednesday, so join us in the chat room at live.theenduser. If you'd like to leave us some feedback, you can do so at contact@theenduser.com or just ping us on Twitter. That's probably the easier of the two. We are at the end.
If they're on Twitter.
If they're on Twitter. It's true. Not everyone's on Twitter.
People on.
Our handle's at the end user, of course.
99.5% of people aren't on Twitter.
Yeah, that's true. But a lot of geeks are on Twitter.
Well, this isn't for them. No, it is. Geeks, please stay.
So you can at reply me at Chris Hale Barnes.
And I'm at Taylor Phone.
We haven't done that in a while. Thanks for listening, everyone. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.